This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Global Legal Innovators, the podcast where you hear from people at the cutting edge of legal innovation across the world. On each episode, we'll have 2 to 3 people from different regions talking about what they do, what their role looks like, and their coolest projects. Today, I'm really pleased to have with me Jeremy Coleman, the head of innovation at Norton Rose Fulbright, based in the UK. However, Jeremy is an expat from Canada and a recovering lawyer. Simon Wormwell, the chief knowledge and innovation officer at Osler, based in Toronto, Canada. Quick fact about Simon, he was my first ever boss in legal innovation, or KM, and so has definitely taught me some of what I know. Welcome to both of you. Thank you so much for being on. Simon, over to you first for a little bit of a deeper introduction and to discuss a little bit about what your role looks like at Osler.
Sure. Thank you, Nikki. I'm like Jeremy. I'm also a recovering lawyer, practiced in transactional practice for about 7 years and moved into knowledge management about 14 years ago, which is a very high and terrifying number. I'm based in Toronto. Our firm has about almost 500 legal professionals in it in all the major centers in Canada, as well as in New York. My title is Chief Knowledge and Innovation Officer. So that implies that I have some level of responsibility for knowledge management, which I do. In particular, my focus is on enterprise-wide KM systems. So things that impact individual or specific practice groups only, as not within my formal responsibility, but systems such as how we manage email, our internet, our search, how we find and share content are within my area of responsibility. I also oversee our library services, and obviously I have a role to play in the firm's innovation program. That includes working on strategy with our innovation partner and innovation council at the firm, executing that strategy with our innovation team, and also working to support a culture of innovation at the firm.
I mean, I think it's so interesting what you talked about as falling under knowledge versus innovation. That's something that I've really been exploring lately, in the way that different firms in different parts of the world define knowledge management. I think in the UK, and Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, knowledge management is much more purely still about content, less about the systems that Simon was talking about. But Jeremy, do you want to talk a little bit about what your role looks like and perhaps a little bit about what innovation looks like at Norton Rose Fulbright?
Love to. Thank you. And thank you, Nikki. Thank you very much for having us. Hello, everyone. So, like you said, I'm Jeremy Coleman, Head of Innovation for NRF in our Europe, Middle East, and Asia part of the firm. And so my responsibility extends to really 4 kind of things. So I run the firm's innovation program, and we may touch on in a little bit more detail later what that involves. But at a higher level, I also have responsibility for identifying and, I suppose, onboarding and then adoption of new technology tools. And that's kind of specifically around legal technology. So things that our lawyers and solicitors and attorneys can kind of take off the shelf and use. Also building and bringing in new kind of capabilities, you know, skill sets, things that will actually are helping to kind of prepare the firm for the future. And then 4th is really around a kind of external collaborations. And we really have the view that there are some problems facing the legal sector and in particular our clients that cannot really be solved by any one firm alone. And so we've had a couple of really, I would say, successful and quite insightful collaborations with other peers, other law firms and clients, which has been, I think, it's provided us, I think, a new kind of platform for being able to solve some of these larger problems.
That's fascinating. That's something that I don't know is happening terribly widely, Jeremy. Can you talk a little bit more about that? So what kinds of client problems are you solving through collaboration with other firms, and how did you get an initiative like that off the ground? I mean, it's something that I think is probably relatively new, in the sense that firms previously would have shied away from collaborating with other firms, perhaps other alt legal service providers, yes, but but other law firms. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's a relatively new concept, I would have to say, or at least from my view. I know certainly that there are kind of working groups in the UK, as I'm sure there are in many other jurisdictions, where you will have kind of very senior partners come together and kind of discuss novel points of law, or there'll be like a law commission or a law society that will have an event in that sense. And I think it's usually around a very specific point in law. This is much more based around technology and innovation, and a lot of it is being driven, you know, I'm very proud to say, through our law society and also through some organizations, one in particular, Barclays and Barclays Ventures. Barclays Ventures has a number of, I think, well over 20 now, startup incubators around the UK, and I think they're starting to look beyond the UK. But one of them focuses on law tech. And they brought together a number of law firms, universities, and other nonprofits to essentially operate as kind of a guiding council partnership. And it's really from there that we've seen a couple of amazing kind of collaborations start. I suppose most people will be somewhat familiar with the Global Legal Hackathon. Two more recent, I guess, collaborations that we've been part of have actually been through that. One, to your question around what the kind of problems are that require more than one law firm, one quite simple but also incredibly complex a problem is around the adoption of electronic signatures for large kind of corporate law firms. And so we were working on a project with Barclays. It was led by Clifford Chance. Ourselves were involved, Ashurst. It also involved DocuSign, Adobe, Neota Logic, and Latera. So it's quite an interesting mix of group of people, specialties, inputs, just looking at how we could help our clients to better adopt and get comfortable with using electronic signatures. So that's kind of, an example.
That's very cool. Is that within the confines of the Global Legal Hackathon?
This one was, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
The role of the client to get us to solve client problems is quite interesting. At my previous firm, we had a global client who made a point in many of its markets to bring law firms together to collaborate together to find efficiencies, process improvements, and innovations in the way that, you know, we serve them. And, you know, sometimes it takes the client, it sounds like NRF is very proactive in this space, but sometimes it takes the client to bring us all to the table to solve problems for a mutual benefit.
Yeah, I think that's right, Simon. And I mean, it's the age old question about who is really driving innovation in the market. Does that come from law firms? Does it come from clients? I think often it does come from the client side. Is that what you're finding, Simon? What are some of the interesting projects you have been working on at Osler?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier talking about some of the cool stuff that we're doing. Some of the cool stuff I can talk about and some I can't. But one that I picked, which is certainly all about delivering client value, is trying to apply design principles to some of our traditional methods of giving advice. And so we've been spending some time with our practice groups looking at that, and we're certainly not the first firm to do that. And, you know, I'm interested in this from an innovation perspective, because often, as you know, people sort of align innovation with technology without thinking about it too much harder. This one really doesn't involve much technology at all. It's just about putting clients first, putting yourself in their shoes and understanding how some of the methods that we might use to deliver advice in a traditional sense aren't that useful to them. It uses language that's hard to understand and operationalize. It's information that's often not in context about what the other possible outcomes might be. And so we're really trying to look at different types of opinions that we deliver, look at our regulatory and compliance advice that we give, and try to come up with different ways to use visualization techniques and, you know, to really kind of depict elements of advice and, you know, right down to format and scope, and really thinking differently about how we can make clients understand what we're saying to them a lot more easily.
So are you using any external providers for that? Have you hired cross-industry service designers? How are you carrying forward that type of initiative?
In our innovation team, we actually have a fair bit of expertise and experience with design thinking. We've held workshops for industry groups and for specific clients on the legal design as a method for innovation. And so we have a fair bit of in-house expertise there. When it comes to execution, we've actually been using members of our alternative legal services delivery platform, Osler Works, as some of the doers behind this. And so we have one particular product where we're looking at how we can summarize elements of a transaction for a client in a more useful and operationalized way. And we're using Kira Systems for that. So an AI contract review tool to help expedite that process. So we don't really have any third-party helpers when it comes to the design itself, but we are looking around our firm and looking for the right expertise to bring to bear on that when it comes to executing sort of the new formats of advice.
It's fascinating, Simon. I really love that this piece about, as you said, putting clients first, putting yourselves in the client's shoes, making legal work more accessible to them. It's becoming a more common refrain across the legal industry, that empathy piece that I think for a long time law firms backed away from. Jeremy, are you seeing any of that at Norton Rose?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the comments around empathy, certainly it's been, I think, our experience that has a number of additional benefits beyond kind of just perhaps building a better solution or product. When you initially propose that to somebody who's not experienced it, particularly where you're involving, you know, a number of people from a client, it's not the traditional kind of let's sit down in a meeting type of across the table from each other and hash something out. So it's unusual, but the feedback that we've received from both internally from our kind of our internal clients, our partners, and from the individuals from the client in where we've engaged in this activity, from internally, it's been, wow, I mean, that couple of hours I've just spent with the client has been amazing for developing relationships. And we had different people at the table, people that we hadn't met, understanding the dynamic, being able to really work together and actually come to kind of a consensus. And so they, for the partners in particular that have been involved, they've seen it as a wonderful relationship building experience. From the client side, interestingly, we've also had some comments back that have said, you know, there's these people I've worked with before, but we've actually never had an opportunity to come together to solve a problem like this. And so actually through facilitating some of these workshops, we're actually also building relationships within the client as well.
One of my favorite pieces of feedback that we received on these sessions was from the hospitality team that works on our client floor. We reported that these sessions were like the loudest ones that they've ever held and it involved the most laughter. So
that's a great sign.
I love that.
It's funny. I mean, I know some of the amazing things that Norton Rose has done and that Osler is doing. And I didn't necessarily expect that the conversation would take the turn it has, which is technology is great, but it's really nothing unless you're listening to the client. So I think it's really kudos to both of you for putting that as a priority with your initiative. I want to turn to talk a little bit about innovation generally in the legal ecosystem. And in particular, I think it's fascinating, Jeremy, you are from Canada. Simon is from Canada, but Jeremy, you're actually in the UK. I'm interested in the way that things are unfolding in different regions. Simon, what are you seeing in Canada in terms of what's the appetite for legal technology solutions, legal innovation, doing things differently in the legal market there?
Yeah, well, when it comes to legal technology and the number of companies, startups that have graduated into ongoing enterprises, Toronto's actually a little bit of a center for that. And I think there was actually, to speak to the expat part of this conversation, I think it was the UK Law Society did a comparative study in November of 2019 about UK as a jurisdiction for legal technology and in comparison with other jurisdictions. And Toronto was noted there as a sort of an emerging center. There's probably a few reasons for that. It's obviously Canada's financial and legal center. There's been a lot of support for technology startups and innovation generally through government and private enterprise projects. We're very close to a couple of excellent universities on the technology side, the University of Waterloo, and of course, the University of Toronto, that's very prevalent in artificial intelligence studies. And you know, there have been some successful experiments, I guess, with accelerating legal technology. Specifically, our firm is the founding member of the Legal Innovation Zone, which is a startup accelerator at Ryerson University in Toronto. So you bring that together, if you were to look for legal tech companies that are in the Toronto space, you'll find quite a number of them. And we have some very successful companies that have come from Toronto, including Cura Systems. So when you bring vendors together with firms, you know, there is an appetite to try new things, and we have a fairly collaborative legal system here in Toronto, and there's a lot of sharing and communication of knowledge, best practices, and information about legal tech companies in our market. So all in all, it's quite there is an appetite certainly to do things differently and to do them better for clients.
It sounds like an exciting place to be. And in fact, I mean, I remember working in Canada myself and then moving to New York, which I thought would be so exciting. And, you know, you hear New York, of course, has seemed to be in many ways a forerunner. But in fact, in terms of legal innovation, my experience has been that the smaller markets, perhaps because of pressures, are more likely to progress innovation in certain ways. And I think that's true in Toronto, as you say, Simon. I remember the survey that you mentioned because it completely omitted Australia as a comparative region. And from my perspective, Australia and Canada are quite similar in the sense that the markets are small and innovation is rife. Jeremy, what do you see of the market in the UK? I mean, you were talking a little bit about government initiatives to get law firms collaborating. So that sounds pretty innovative to me.
I would agree. Yeah. I mean, the market here is, and the kind of legal innovation ecosystem is incredibly strong. We've got some, you know, key conferences, events here. You know, you've got Legal Geek, Jimmy Vesprick and his team, what they've done with kind of bringing legal innovation to the masses, I think, has been unbelievable. You've also got the Legal Innovators Conference, which is run by Richard Tromans, and many of you will probably know him from the online magazine Artificial Lawyer. You've also got partnerships between many, many different organizations through the Law Tech Delivery Panel, which is part of the Law Society. They've recently announced a partnership with Tech Nation, and I believe there's some funding in there as well. Then you've got, I've already mentioned them, but you've got key kind of ecosystem supporters like Barclays and their Eagle Lab network, but you've also got interest from what would traditionally have been, I think, tech-only incubator or kind of startup spaces. Plexel is one. You've got another one, Codebase in Edinburgh, all of whom have taken kind of a keen interest in legal tech as an industry and helping to support that. And you've got a number of other of our peer law firms that have, you know, incubators either physically within their offices or some kind of similar program. So it is incredibly strong, and it's a wonderful place to be. And, you know, to Simon's point earlier, Toronto, well, obviously we've got a number of offices in Canada as well as a firm. And you know, there's some very, very strong companies in, especially in Toronto, but even across Canada. It's fantastic to see that.
I think it has to be asked, given the current circumstances across the world, do either of you feel like COVID-19 has pushed the innovation envelope?
Oh, yes.
I do. I mean, we've also participated in the Global Legal Hackathon that Jeremy mentioned earlier. We worked with a company called Vaulti, V-A-U-L-T-I-E. Their website's at .io. And just an example of the opportunity that this company sees, they're in trying to verify identity when completing e-signatures for various types of documents. And they're using facial recognition technology in the blockchain to do that. And I just raised that company as obviously, you know, they're seeing opportunities given the new working conditions they might not have seen otherwise, including, you know, regulatory bodies in Ontario and other Canadian jurisdictions. I'm sure it's happening around the world, where we're easing some of the regulatory limitations on the use of these signatures for certain types of documents. Of course, our clients have different sets of expectations. They're demanding more, more quickly. And so, you know, we need to step in to the space and take this opportunity to continue to innovate.
Jeremy, what about you?
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I mean, it's been joked about in so many different forms, you know, what's driving your transformation journey. And I mean, a lot of our clients, it's wonderful to see that the kind of proactive nature that a lot of people, a lot of different groups from internally from our, you know, traditional business services side, all of everyone pulling together to kind of provide a much more holistic kind of service to our clients. We've got a fantastic kind of quasi new law program called Transform, which is a collection of experts in everything from, you know, pricing to project management to legal design, all kind of pulling together to support our lawyers to, and in some cases actually leading on mandates through our legal operations consulting practice. And it's just to see everybody coming together and just working in this remote environment is actually really inspiring and really exciting.
Again, collaboration, really key. Well, thank you both so much. I have one final question and then we have to end. Very quickly, one cool new tool that you think people should know about. I'm putting you on the spot. Jeremy, go.
I would have to say StructureFlow.
Oh, what, do you want to quickly explain what it does?
So it's a tool that goes for most lawyers, actually not just transactional, but most lawyers at some point will have to draw a structure diagram or an organizational chart. And it's a kind of a quick diagramming tool that's been built for lawyers. So you've got all of your kind of template assets and different payment flows, and you can very quickly diagram up, collaborate with your clients, collaborate internally. It's pretty fantastic.
Thank you. And Simon, quickly, what one last tool that you think people should know about?
I mentioned Vaulty already, so I'm going to go back to the future and talk about a tool that does something quite simple and elegant. It's called Beeline. It was developed by a partner who works in the tax space in Toronto. He's also an MIT grad. And what it does is help you quickly extract text, probably from email in the context of your practice, do a live black line and reinsert that black line back into your email. So if you want to actually do track your changes inside of Outlook, rather than in a Word document or using Workshare or other blacklining technology, allows you to quickly do that. And it really kind of enables a mobile professional that way. It can be an application on your phone. So you can, particularly when you're just giving comments on texts that's in an email, it helps you be a lot more efficient.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you both. I have learned something today. It's been wonderful speaking to you. And thank you so much for participating on this podcast. Thanks everyone for listening. I'll see you next time.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.